Hello, if you're just tuning in, welcome to the Blessings of Christ. It is Sunday, April the 12th, and we are so thrilled that you are here. Glenda will be coming online any second now. We are just approaching the 3 o'clock hour, and we're happy that you're here with us for this next hour, hour and a half, wherever you are. Folks are calling in from all over. Don't know all the area codes, but do know a lot of them. So welcome to the call. Welcome to the Blessings of Christ. Today, if you have a question, if you'd like to share a blessing, a prayer request, something that's been answered, something that's burning on your heart, we'd love to hear from you. *6 and *1 to get yourself into the queue, and then we will open your line at the end of the call. I hope everyone had a wonderful Easter. It was beautiful with our family. The weather wasn't beautiful. It was cold and rainy and interesting, but it was still a lot of fun. Kids in the bounce house with sundresses on and bare feet, while all adults were all huddled with blankets and jackets. So it was a real contrast, but a lot of fun. So wherever you are, we send you love and blessings, and we're really, really happy you're here today. Okay. No, Glenda's got something fun in store for us today. We're going to be looking at life and the living, following life and the living. One of the pathways to success, a big one, and make the difference. She's going to probably go over those differences of how that, what that means in the, you know, in the world, worldly things and versus that higher living. In terms of following life and the living. So welcome to the call today. Again, if you have a question, please feel free to press *6 and get yourself in the queue. *6 followed by *1 and you will be in there. I'm going to go ahead and take us out of Q&A real quick. Let's see. In case anybody wants to say hello, everyone is unmuted, so you're washing your dishes. Be sure to mute your phone. I thought I'd just open it up since we had a little moment here before Glenda comes on board. So if you want to say hello, give a shout out, just say hello.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Nancy.
Hello. Yay, that's great. That's exactly what I was hoping to hear. Everybody can hear that folks are from all over, and they're just we're just forming this beautiful circle here together without the walls, right? So it's pretty fun, pretty amazing. Our witness, our lives that we testify to love and being love and vibrating love out into the world. As Yeshua has taught us. So welcome today. I hope you're having a glorious day wherever you are. We are having a very chill day here. It's kind of nice. That's what Sundays are for, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Just commanding from being and really trying not to do too much. Sometimes that's hard, right?
I took a beautiful shower before this.
Oh, that's wonderful. I was talking to Glenda a couple hours ago. She was saying the same thing. She was going to get herself all ready. And, yeah, I like to have my Christ scent and my candle and my notebook. I'm a note writer as well. I know lots of us are. Sometimes it's nice just to listen and absorb. And, you know, you always can go back and listen to that archive. That's a nice thing about the blessing call. You know, they're always recorded, and if you go to the website, there's a link, and you just click on it, and you can get dates and pick which ones you want, so that's really kind of fun.
Settle down.
Yeah.
All right, let me check my phone.
And Glenda, I hope Nancy, I hope you had a really good Easter with all your relatives.
I think there were like 48 of us, y'all. The circle was ginormous. And I think before you got on, Caroline, I was telling folks that it was really cold. It was even colder than when we had Thanksgiving out at the farm. And but the little ones, we had this big bounce house that kind of, you know, they kind of goes into a water area from the top down, and we rented it. And you know, these kids were running around in sun suits and t-shirts and jumping into water, and we were freezing. The adults were all freezing. It was really fun. So the kids are like, they're impervious. They're barefoot, and so that was really fun.
How many grandkids do you have now, Nancy?
We have 13, with number 14 on the way, due July 8th.
Wow.
So I know. It's incredible, really, y'all. These grandkids are just so wonderful. Glenda's calling me. I'm going to see what's going on. Y'all, let me put her on. Let me get her. Can you hear me? Say yes if you can.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Glenda, a little thing with her computer. So as soon as she calls in, I'm going to open her line. Thank you for your patience, everyone. We really appreciate it. And let me double check here. We got going. All right, everybody's being so wonderful. Just waiting for Glenda to dial in. She has some issues with her computer, and so I told her just call in, and I can open her line. Here we go. I'm going to mute everybody, and then I'm going to get her.
Hello, everyone. I am so sorry to be the tardy one today. It came about by a sudden surprise, where I had no passwords. I had my new computer installed yesterday. They assured me all the passwords were in. I checked a few of them out, brought my computer up this morning. Nothing is there. So, I was just surprised by the moment. But it's maybe going to be even in exact example of something we're going to talk about today. But thank you, Nancy, for being here, for providing the bridge to get me in and being with everyone. And we will get started very soon. How are you, Nancy? Everything going well?
Everything's well. It's just been a nice, lazy day. So I've enjoyed that. I've been looking forward to the call, and You know, I've just been really happy. And I don't know why, but I've just been really happy.
You got spring fever, girl.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
Spring is here. Oh, no, no, really. When life is so abundant around us, it's like a big meal. And what do you feel like after you get a big meal? You wanna lounge, relax, enjoy the day, maybe take a nap, etc. Do I need to say more? Okay. So nature is, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, nature is having a spring day, and a lot of beautiful energy is available for us. And that really determined what I wanted to talk to you about today. We've got a good lesson, and I won't make it long, so we can still stay on time for our blessing. But you know, we've been discussing in the previous sessions some pretty intense subjects and some very, very high level realities. Well, I just want to remind you in this one that God's not somewhere else in some high reality you have to study and work and meditate and pray to get to. He's right there with you. He's in you, created you, will be with you all the days of your life. He supports you in your troubles. He doesn't judge you because you didn't understand something properly. You know, we all have those times, and he's still with us, you know, because he's with the spirit of life, and the spirit of life in all things brings the presence of God into us. I want to really take some time in the next few weeks, maybe today and three more weeks, to go over the principles in Love Without End that fell under the subject of success, pathways to success. We all want to have a successful life. We just don't all define it the same way. For some, happiness is fine. Others, good health and just enjoyment of the physical experience is fine. For others, they want to throw in perhaps accomplishments, social and professional accomplishments that make a difference in the world. We all got a different definition of what success is, but Yeshua pared it down to four categories of attention and service and development that will ensure our success, no matter how you choose to define the end product. So I just thought that would be a good switch of attention for this week after all of the transcendental and metaphysical subjects we had leading up to the celebration of Easter. Now, and Nancy, you are personifying it. You really are, as you so often do. So now there are these four principles. We won't cover all today. I'm just going to pick one, and we're going to dive into that. I'll let you know why I'm going to pick it. It's not the first one. But these four principles on the pathway to success. Number one is be the love that you are. Be who you are. All of your talents were given to you. Don't waste your time trying to do what somebody else is good at, but you don't seem to have any special ability for it. Don't waste your time on that. Look and honor your abilities, and especially what brings out the love in you. What do you love doing? How do you love being? How do you love being with others? How do you love engaging with life? The love that you are is your authentic self. There's a whole chapter in that, In Love Without End. And we might actually take that chapter up a little ways down the road, but for now it's enough to just say that the love you are is your authentic self. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't also have responsibilities and duties and compassionate extensions of ourselves and friends and family that ask other things of us. Sure, you're gonna have that component in life too. But you're probably going to try to be efficient about those things and get them handled. Somebody's sick, you show up, you want to cheer them up, bring them something healthy to enjoy, maybe give them some information they could benefit by, give them a hug, and get on with your day. You're not going to make a banquet out of things you do, out of loyalty and responsibility, when there's something over on the other side you want to do that you love. I mean, you're human, and you're supposed to be that way. You really are. You're supposed to spend your life with what you love, who you love, and cultivate more things and activities, experiences that you do love. You are a love generator. And sure, sometimes you just have to get down in the ditch and hug somebody who's on the hurting, shall we say, the hurting side of life. Maybe they've lost someone they love. Maybe they're worried about their surviving financially, keeping up with the mortgage, getting the kids through school, whatever. You know, we got to be with it, with people there on the hurting side of life, because as we bring others up, we really begin to see the fruits of our love. And that takes us to move on through this pathways to success. The second one is do the right thing. We've got a lot of people who are going to try to tell us what we should be doing. You can't should your way to the right thing. First of all, the right thing is constructive. Not necessarily morality or ethics the way it's prescribed in a, in a how to be the best person book, you know, because how to be the best person is going to be a little different for everybody else. You've got to take a look at how you can get the best results in life. In other words, produce fruits of the soul and the spirit of your love, your good nature, and the community you live in. We have focused way too much on morality being the only pathway to do the right thing. Just like we would ban a woman in the 19th century for wearing lipstick. She would be pushed out of her town, for heaven's sake. Her husband would divorce her for wearing lipstick. You got to be kidding, you know. And the same with so many other social transgressions. I don't want to say my age, but anyway, I'm senior enough that in my first, gosh, I think it was about 8 years of school, I was not allowed to wear jeans or pedal pushers or any kind of pants to school. It had to be skirts or dresses. Ladies were not supposed to wear pants in social situations. Now, yeah, I was really into horses and riding, so I could wear my riding pants when I was on a horse. But a century before that, if I wanted to ride a horse, I had to ride side saddle so that it could accommodate skirts. Can you imagine the inconvenience and the silliness of trying to ride a horse in skirts? Back in the day, when you only got somewhere if you rode a horse or if you rode in a carriage. Horses were, I mean, this is why we still measure automobiles by horsepower, because for ages and ages, horses were how we traveled. So it was really doing the right thing to put the girls in blue jeans or some kind of pants, because we couldn't even enjoy sports or recess time having to go out in our pretty little dresses. Just how silly. How silly. I'm using these silly examples because I want you to see that we're not just talking about social conformity or superficial morality. Of course, real morality always counts. You don't invade the life of other people imposing your own rules on them and shaming them for how they behave. You just don't. There's a place for ethics and morality, but it should be at a high place where the things you manage with those levels are important, and not whether you eat a carrot with an avocado. You think that sounds silly? No, there's not. There is food combining agendas in many cultures, and you could go to hell for combining the wrong things, really, or eating the wrong things. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about doing what produces a fruitful life, not only for you, but for others. Okay, now we move on to the one we're going to focus on today. We'll go through all of these as we get through the next 2 to 3 weeks, but this is the one I really wanted to focus today, and you'll see why. And that is follow life in the living. Yeshua gave his life, his physical life, on the cross to show us that life never ends. It doesn't. It takes forms. It takes different forms. And the fact is, you probably don't remember much from your life before 3 years old. You could access it if your mother had taken notes and you read them, or if you were under a hypnotic trance and you were told to go back to the age of one and tell me what happened in your life. And, you know, those maneuvers are available, but you probably don't remember most of them. And that's why the reason is that life changed for you drastically at the age of 3. You were a toddler and still a babe in the womb, except you had legs and arms and a free spirit, so you could move around, willfully explore, get into things, and drive your mother crazy. But your age of consciousness began about the age of 4, when you could really think things through and be conscious of what you're doing. I try to cultivate. I'll give you a little. Homemade example this morning. I don't have children, and I live with 3 beautiful, intelligent, wonderful cats. But they push my limits, just like any kid will do. They all want my chair. They want it. If I'm not there, one of them wants to be there. And I get challenged, a little annoyed, getting back, and there's someone in my chair. And so I tell them, hey, that's my chair. I'm going to sit down. It wasn't a good idea that you sat there, but you rethink that one. In other words, I give them a chance to think about what they did. Because whether you're talking about kids or animals or just thoughtless people, you're doing them a real favor instead of judging them or scolding them for things they did. just say, you know, I think you should rethink that. That's not going to work for you. So I told my little guy, I said, I'm going back to the kitchen when I get back. We're going to talk about why you're in my chair. Okay. And I suggest in the meantime, you just rethink it all. I use that to bring up the consciousness because they know if they would think at all, and they do, they're not stupid. They're just, trying to annoy mom. That's it. But they need to rethink their actions. That can make a huge difference in just getting people on the right path, is to get them to think about, well, what comes next? Where do I go from here? And like I said, so I got back and he was out of my chair. He was in his chair. And I said, well, that's good. You made the right choice. Okay. Well, this is what happens to all of us every day. We get to choose where we go. Just like with the cats, we get to choose what chair we sit in. And one of those chairs is going to feel real good and the other one's not going to feel good. We get to choose what's going to bring out life in us. And how do we cultivate our life? Well, the first thing I want to emphasize on that is that God is everywhere with you. You don't have to prematurely arrive in heaven to meet God. He's right there. And that's the best way I know to follow life in the living, is to establish an indelible and intimate, loving connection with the one who created you. I mean, really, is there any better shortcut to life in the living than to the one who created it all? Okay, the next thing is that there's no shortage of life. I drill myself on that because sometimes we choose something that's not right for us because we don't see, actually, that there's an abundance of life around us. We look at where there seems to be the most activity trending. Oh, I really don't like that word because it's misled so many people. But it's a popular concept all across the world right now. What's trending? As if trends produce life. Well, they don't. Trends are a reflection of popularity. And sometimes the greater number of people can vote on the wrong thing. They can follow the wrong trend. And they're going to have to rethink that, get back to consciousness. Well, the reason I keep coming back to consciousness is, what produces consciousness? Life. Have you ever walked up to something dead, like a piece of concrete, and you talk to it? What did you get out of it? Nothing. Because it's dead. Sometimes we can talk to a tree and it's kind of happy to be, well, acknowledged. Maybe it doesn't talk back. Certainly it wouldn't talk in words, but it may send you some energy. And you may just kind of want to lean up on that tree because you've got some nice, nice energy. And because you leaned up on that tree, you might want to just sit down under that tree for a little while. What's happening is that the energy of life is embracing you and hugging you in its own way without words. You recognize life. You engaged with it. Why do you think we wake up and get refreshed when we walk on the beach? There's probably no greater source of life on this planet than the oceans of the world. We probably the most, I read a survey once on the most popular places for a vacation, and 80% included some body of water. An ocean, maybe a lake, for water skiing, something, or going to visit the Niagara Falls or some of their beautiful falls. Some people come back with stories of the rainforest, and they're just blown away. It's like they just say it was almost like a visit with God. My lungs were so filled with oxygen. My heart was so filled with life. I'll never forget that. And they're just blown away by what they get from life and the living. All right, so now I've kind of made my point on how to recognize it when it's happening for you. And be alert, because when it's happening for you, that's where you need to go. You need to be in touch with things that are as alive as possible for you. And so now we'll just look at how we put that into our practical, productive life. Well, as you know, I'm sure you know by now, some careers and jobs are rewarding and productive. Lots of ways to be productive. Maybe you made great friends there. Maybe it enriched your soul, your understanding. And you might have made money, which is also something we hope for. But there's a lot of ways of being productive, but you got to recognize, was this really worth the life and the time I put into it? And did I make a profit with what I invested? And not all profit is money. There's many other kinds of profit. But did you make a profit from doing and being there for something? And if you can answer yes, then you might want to consider for a while. If it was kind of yes, but not really, well, it's time to step back and take a look at, can you improve that, or do you need to find another stop along the way? There's plenty out there, but we get fixed on the few things that really work well for us, and then we forget to take stock after a while that maybe they're not working that well anymore. Maybe living in a place isn't working so well anymore, because you came there out of inspiration, because you had great friends there. And since then, let's just say some of your friends moved on. Some of them passed away. Some of them just got into other circles of people. And the reason you moved there doesn't much exist anymore, but you feel like you're stuck. That can happen. It can happen a lot of things. It can happen in your career. It can happen in just the house you live in, or where you shop for food, how you go out for exercise or diversion, how you meet new people. You know, it's important. I'm going to use an analogy here. It's important to polish your shoes. It's really actually been surveyed, if you can believe people would go so far as to survey this. The first thing people notice about you are your feet or your shoes. Doesn't make sense to me, because I spent so much of my life either barefoot or in boots. And as an artist, I was barefoot most of the time. As a horticulturalist, I loved the ground, and I was in sandals until I took them off. And as an early cowgirl, of course, I was in boots. And I love boots today for dressing up. That was kind of unreal to me. But then I read some explanations about it, what it means. And what it meant to most other people is your capacity to move on, to move through things and move on. Say, look at your feet. And have you polished your feet lately? Have you polished your shoes? Well, that's kind of sounds like a silly analogy, but not really. I'm going to take a parable from Yeshua. It was actually in two of the books. It might have been more, I just know it from Luke and Matthew. So we'll just go to Matthew 24. It's the parable of the fig tree. Yeshua and the apostles had been traveling on a hot, dusty road, hungry. I mean, really hungry and wanting something. How are they going to find food? Well, we know he could have multiplied it, but that's not what he was teaching the apostles at that time. That wasn't his lesson plot at the moment, because he was teaching them how to recognize life and how to find life in the living. Now, of course, we can find God on any level, but we live on this planet in the life and the living. And it's important to find where there is life, where that life will bring us food. Okay, so they came across, they were traveling beside a vineyard. Pardon me. And they saw this huge fig tree. And it was an ancient tree that was filled out with lots of leaves and branches. And it looked like, it really looked like it would be a fruitful tree. And it was in fig season. So he pulled the apostles over and he said, just sit around the fig tree and I'll pull you down some figs to eat. Well, he went up, he broke off one limb that he thought should have enough figs for everybody. And it was not even one single fig on it. He broke off another and another. And by that time, he was really annoyed. You know, like, we stopped here to have lunch. And there's nothing. There's really nothing. And he was losing his temper. And the owner of the vineyard came up and he said, Yeshua said, cut this tree down. It's not bearing any fruit. It's taking nutrients from the soil, water from the soil, and bearing nothing for you to eat. And the owner of the vineyard said, well, but you know, I love this old tree. It's been here like forever. And, you know, I've got an attachment to it. And Yeshua really scolded him. He said, no. All right. Let's give this tree one more year. I will give it my blessing. I will give it my love. And we'll check on it. If it can turn around and bear fruit, then it can stay. It can live. That's one of the best stories I know about the redemptive power of Christ, life, energy, and recognition. There's so many, there's a lot of levels to that power and that parable. First of all, there was the disappointed expectation about that fig tree. Have you ever met someone or something that looked really prosperous and successful, and the more you got familiar with it, you found, but there's nothing there. There's nothing meaningful, nothing, it's all vanity. They probably pay more on upkeep and taxes than that house is worth to them. Why would they do that? What's calling them to make those indulgent expenses? And it changes your opinion. But you decide anyway, all right, I'm going to take a chance on it. The last time I can remember something like that was at a restaurant. It was a very well-reviewed, highly reviewed restaurant. And I thought, well, I'll splurge a little today. I've been taking care of myself at home for so long. I'd like to see how the rest of the world eats. So I went in. I picked up the menu, and I didn't see anything on that menu that I would want to eat. Oh, no, it was pretty fancy in ways, but the fried food, no, thank you. All the sugary stuff, not on my life. And so the waitress came over, and I told her what I was expecting. And I just said, well, do you have any fresh salads that are really mostly vegetables, mostly raw vegetables? And what do you have in the way of meat that hasn't been fried or cooked yet? And so we came up with something that was nourishing and good, and I was happy with it. And before I left her a nice, generous tip because she took care of me. And before I left, the owner came up, and he said, I heard you were pretty picky with our menu. We don't usually get that. And I just said, I'm sure you have a talented chef because all of these are famous items you have on your menu. But have you ever considered that they're not very nourishing? I said, I'm really into nourishment. You know, I'm not a this or that type of diet as long as it's got food value. And he said, well, you're the first one that ever called my attention to that. And I said, well, good. Good. I think you should maybe consider serving everybody. You know, we all want to eat, and at your prices, you can afford and still make a profit by serving more nutritious cuts of meat, of veggies, and everything. And think about taking those fried potatoes off, please. He laughed. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a free meal. You come back and we'll have a discussion. So I did. Which means, okay, like the fig tree. That was just, you know, the owner liked the fact that it looked great. It was taking all the nutrients from the ground and building these lush green leaves. But why would you keep a fig tree to do that? It's not the role of a fig tree. And so he gave it another year to live, and it did. Yeshua came back the next year, and they feasted on the figs. So, yes, you can turn around everything. Nothing has to have final judgment, but we need to take stock of what we're doing. Is this still a good thing for me to do? And I'll close on this one other example of life in the living that will lead us directly into do the right thing for next time. All right. So here's a kid. Here's a little kid, and he doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. He just wants to have a good life, have fun, grow up, and do some really fun things with his friends and parents. All right. So we got that. We know what that's like. He gets up into his teens, and he's getting ready to graduate from high school, and he'll have a lot of aptitude tests, and people talk to him about what would you like to major in college, okay? And most of what they're going to throw at him is income probability, like maybe you should go into technical work. There's a lot more money to be made than it is in botany. Well, yeah, there's a lot of good sense in that, but it's coming from current trends. Anyway, he follows he knows what he loves. He knows exactly what he would do if he did what he loves. but he follows the advice and becomes an attorney. And he becomes a good one, makes a lot of money, and absolutely hates his work. Got ulcers, premature heart palpitations, and all the doctors can do is tell him to cut down on cholesterol and fat. Don't eat fats and don't eat cholesterol. Well, that's not going to solve anything. Not going to solve a doggone thing. And so he meets up with someone who's really, truly a counselor of life. And she says, we got to go back to the root of this problem. Are you really in the right profession? And he says, well, you know, I make good, really good money, and I've got to get my kids through college now. So I got to keep up with this. And this counselor says, well, how are you going to keep up with this from the grave? And that gets his attention. She says, you got to put life back in your world. You got to put life back in you. What do you think is going to heal you? Medicine? Cutting back on some deadly foods? You think it's going to help you? I'll tell you what's going to heal you. Life. Life is going to heal you. And she says, I'm just going to ask you to prove it to yourself. I want you to take a vacation somewhere where there's a lot of life and come back, and then we'll have our next session. You've got to get the life back inside yourself. And he says, well, you know, I really wanted to do that when I was young. I wanted to be a teacher. Well, his counselor brightened up and she said, really? You wanted to be a teacher? Why didn't you? He says, well, teachers don't make any money. And she, of course, said, well, that was a fatal mistake. It could be literally a fatal mistake. And so she gets him back to get his educational certificate. And she says, you know, what you learned through life, you can teach in night school. Just start there. You've got the credentials and you've got the certification now. Just go around to some community colleges and get yourself a position in night school and get tuned into your students and what you can give them. Now this is actually a real story. We're building up to something here. And he did that. And one of them brought up an idea. You know, we work all day. It's hard for us to come here at night, but we love you and we love this study. Is there anything you can do to help us online? Online. Well, that was right before the pandemic hit us and almost everything went online. Well, he was one of the earliest facilitators of online study for, little kids. You know, grades 1 through 12, not just evening study for professionals, but we had to figure out how to get courses of learning at all levels into kids that needed to stay home to be protected. And then on top of that, it turns out that there was something in his training as a lawyer that helped him to carve out the legalities of transitioning kids from appearing at the classroom into studying at home and how to certify that. He finally was able to put it all together. And since that time, he is a picture of health. Training to run the marathon, no heart problems, No digestive problems. Cholesterol normal. Happy. And yes, he still made enough money. All his kids are going through college. So you've got to, if you don't work with life, life can't work with you. It wants to, but you haven't opened the door. You've got to open the door and don't just go for what can earn you money now. I know we have to be practical about these things. We have to get support, supply, and the ability to continue investing in our life and what we want to do. But there's so many pathways of life that you just need to look at what you can do right now that will bring you alive. Alive is the word. Production comes from being alive. You can't produce if you're not alive. You can't. You'll be dull and boring. Or you'll be trying to imitate what other people do. This is why, I guess this would be a good thing to end on. This is why there's one of the Ten Commandments. All of them are serious and severe with major consequences in life. Okay? There wouldn't be anything in there if there weren't major consequences in life. One of them is not to covet. And we might think that's the same as just wishing I could do what they do. It, kind of being jealous. But what happens when you're that way? It's okay to admire other people and study what they did to be more successful. Of course. Of course we're going to do that. But you know what? The people who are really successful are not patterning their life after anyone. The Wright brothers had no one to pattern their life off of. Just to get that crate in off the ground in the air and back down safely. You know, being original is a big part of being alive. Because God has already given you your talents. Maybe we'll take a look at the parable of the talents next week, because that's got a lot to do with doing the right thing. But you can't just go through life following trends and doing what other people are doing. You will get a small percentage of what they can get. In other words, you will be wasting your life, and that's a big deal. And in the process, you might steal from other people ideas that truly belong to them and need to be respected. Respect your parents. Why? They don't always do the right thing. Some of them have been very abusive, and they need to be made accountable for that. But they gave you life. They gave you life. And in you is an imprint that you can use for the rest of your life, what it feels like when something is giving you life. What does it feel like? They may have tried and failed. Bless their hearts. They may have just worked themselves to the bone to where they were constantly irritable and took on to alcohol. You know, we're all human. We all fail. But there was a point when they gave you life. And what did that feel like? Having that feeling and that recognition uncovered for you is the treasure map you've been looking for, which is the reason that admonition is followed by, so that you may have prosperity all the days of your life. Because you know what it feels like to connect with life. You did make that connection. And even if you regretted it later, you still made that connection, and you know what it feels like. Got to recover what it feels like to connect with life. There's your power. There's your instrument of success. And it can happen for anybody at any point in the sequence of the years you've lived. It was always living your life. But how much fuel was in your tank? That's the only thing that made a difference. What was the fuel in your tank? And were you willing to rethink decisions you have made before? Were you willing to come to it with a spirit of newness? There were many passages, or I should say many conversations, Yeshua and I had originally about the spirit of innocence. And there's a lot of reasons why and a lot of context that was mentioned in. One is that forgiveness can renew our life and make us, especially receiving the Holy Spirit, can renew our life completely. And we can approach the existence of ordinary life around us with a spirit of innocence. How about looking at that divider that we have in our room? Let's say we've got a room divider somewhere in our house, and it's been there for years, and we haven't looked at it because it just creates another space for us. We walk around it, and then today we're going to look at that again, and we're going to make an assessment. Is that really doing something there? Maybe it's cutting down my flow between these two rooms. Look at things again with a fresh state of mind, fresh eyes, and be willing to rethink them. I think often, I apologize for being a little bit gender-oriented here, but I think often women do this a little more than men do, because men are very focused on their work, very focused on results, which is a great attribute to have. Really, it's a great attribute. But women just love rearranging the furniture. I know my mother would be rearranging the furniture maybe every 3 months, and my dad would come home, and he would say, "Where's my table? Alma, what did you do with it now?" And she said, "Well, it needs to be over here. That's where are you gonna come in the house? You're gonna put your things down. You're gonna put your keys in the drawer. It just needs to be over here." And he'll say, "Well, okay, all right. Now that I know where it is." You know, and I do that too. And so apologies if anyone took that in the wrong way. But I just bring you experiences from my life and apply them to situations that might be real to you. Because I think making things real is a part of living. Life doesn't stop. I guess the most important thing to say is life goes on, whether or not we walk with it. And you got to look at where it is now and think about where you stand with it. Okay? That's following life in the living. You got to, the operative word is follow.
it doesn't say capture and put it in a box, keep it in my pocket, and keep doing the same old thing year after year after year. Get on with it. Come alive. Do something fun. Do something that brings you joy. And yes, call an old friend, because anything that was ever once good could be made good again. Maybe not for the long haul, because, you know, you might have gone completely different paths with your old friend. There's not much to talk about, but it does, it will do you both great good to say hello and revive the years you spent together. Just honor all the years you've lived and then move them forward. Life never stops. And I guess that's the biggest mistake we make with it, other than not choosing it in the first place. Just, it never stops. Stay with it. Try not to judge the young people. You were young and foolish once upon a time, too. They're just doing life. They're experimenting to find out what works for them. But you talk to them, and you're going to find there, even though there may be a little frustration, a little bit of upset about various things, their voice is prettier than yours because it's altogether new. And even though they may be wrong about a lot of things, they're just checking it out. Think about all the things you checked out on. Oh, my generation, the boomers, are you kidding? We checked out on everything, and we sure objected to a lot of things. But we were probably one of the most alive generations ever. Even if we weren't always good guys about it, we had things to say. And I love my generation for that. I do. And we're probably going to be the first whole generation that makes it to an extreme age point, that we're going to move the life expectancy forward by about 10 years. I project that. You know, we've had people living past 100 years for ages and ages, but those are people who live healthier lives or just had better genetics or more protection in life. You know, God's blessing. Always there. God always blesses people to show us what's possible so that we will continue reaching for what's possible. But the actuarial files that are going to come down through the ages after our generation has, my generation has come and gone, the actuarial files will have changed significantly because we loved life. You want to age better? Love life. I'll tell you something. There's one thing that doesn't age. It never ages. Life. It just moves on. But it doesn't age. So let it move on with you. Wrap your arms around life. And my friends, if you got stuck in something, the fight is not worth it. I'll tell you right now, you're fighting over something, you're disagreeing over something, you want to win over something. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Life is the only thing worth it. Follow it. Put more life in your food, more life in your relationships, more life in your home, more life in your work. That'll get you where you want to go because the conductor is God and life is the train. That's it. Okay, my dear. Nancy, would you open the board? Yeah.
I will. And, everything you said, Glenda, is so true. And I do like to think about how it's so easy to see when you talk about life and the living, just the opposite, the dead and the dying. And I when I see that in friends or family or myself, it, you know, it does cause unnecessary suffering. And it's just incredible that, you know, the recipe is pretty simple. You know?
Yeah, it is. It really is. I had a major, I'm sorry, I got to carry this on because of what you stimulated. I had a major disagreement with my brother and sister in the ancient years of my mother. I wanted her to stay at home in her garden because that was what was alive for her. Well, they felt very drawn to their responsibility, but they lived maybe 2 hours away from her and didn't like that distance. So they wanted to put her in a nursing home. Yeah, my mother in a nursing home. There is no way. Okay, well, she took care of it, and I knew she would because she understood this principle very, very well. Well, they put her there. We had a terrible disagreement with my brother and sister, and I just finally said, okay, you have it your way. I'm not going to spend my years arguing with you because I just want to be with my mom, and she'll take care of it. I knew she would. Well, she got there, and the first day she was there, she looked out the window, and she said, oh, you've got a garden out there. And I said, yeah, people like to go and sit in the garden. And she says, can I garden it for you? That's my mom. I knew she would. Without a shadow of a doubt, she took over the garden. Okay. Well, but she was also missing her own garden, and she wanted to get some tools, and my brother and sister wouldn't bring her tools because they knew what she was doing. I mean, they wanted her just to be an old lady. They thought just being an old lady, resting in a chair, watching TV, and talking to other old people was the right thing to do after you're 90. And my mother said, you got to be kidding. Well, one day, they went into her room to bring her breakfast, and she was missing. They looked all over the facility. No Alma there. They called. They brought in security looking for my mom, and they finally found her 2 miles down the road, going back to her home to get her tools.
Wow.
And it was a cold day, and of course they wrapped her up in blankets, put her in the, well, it was an ambulance. She says, can I ride in the back, in the front seat, please? Okay, that's my mother. Anyway, so they got her back home, and they said, how did you get out? Do you have a key? And she says, no, I just went through the doggy door. I hope everyone's laughing with that. He didn't have a dog, but patients were allowed to have one pet. And they had made that doggy door big enough to accommodate, well, maybe a medium-sized dog. And my mother was a very, very tiny human being at that point. Still all muscle and bone, but tiny. Okay, so she left through the doggy door. And she was wearing her gardening shoes, appropriate. But you didn't stop the life and the living in her until her last breath. Finally, she passed on through pneumonia. She couldn't stand, you know, the condition she was in. She brought on pneumonia, took her last breath, and she was gone. But she wasn't finished. She gave me the last ingredient in Christ Sent. When I went to be in meditation with her at the Grand Canyon. I knew I'd have to go to someplace big if I was going to get her attention. And Larry drove me up there, and I was sitting on the south rim of the, and she came in spirit. And she brought on a rain that illuminated all the fragrances around the canyon. And one of those was exactly what I had been looking for. So she never stopped living. I'm sure the gardens of heaven really appreciate her there. And I can't wait to see her again, but I'm not going to hate her today because I like the life I'm living. And I think this is a really important thing for us to understand about other people, because we might not want to live the life they're living, but as long as they're producing goodness, decency, and life that all of us can share, well, that's their business. You know, we shouldn't be rounding people up and diminishing their ability to create the best life they can. So that takes us to how to do the right thing next week. So come back for session number 2, and we're going to get through it all. We're going to recreate this chapter so you're just doing better in life. That's what I want for you. Okay, hey, Nancy, let's sit.
I'm going to open up Caroline. We have Caroline. Your line is open. Can you hear us, Caroline?
Yes, amazing. What an amazing session. And one thing that came to mind was another amazing book that I've read. It's an old book from the, I think it was written maybe in the 40s, Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. And touches on a lot of what you're talking about, that, you know, and all the psychological problems people have. Well, mainly it's not because they're mentally ill. It's because they feel their life has no meaning. And if you don't have any meaning in your life, you want to give up. So I think that's such an important thing to consider. It's an amazing book. Over 18 million copies sold. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. And based on his experiences in a concentration camp where the fact that he managed to survive living there for as long as he did was pretty remarkable. And he was a psychiatrist, I think, before mm-hmm. that. And so he doesn't cover the spiritual aspect that strongly, which you obviously cover, but he does cover how important it is that we have a purpose in life. And that keeps us going. And it allows us to deal with suffering, because otherwise the suffering has no meaning. If the suffering has meaning, then we can deal with it. So,
exactly.
That's the thing. Just a couple of little blessings that I was going to ask for, and since it's springtime, I have this major landscape garden backyard project that I'm involved in that became much bigger than I had thought. I was just clearing some dead brush because my neighbor lost their main house in Lahaina, and so they're very, very concerned about fire risk. And I thought I was just going to do a favor, clear out all the dead trees, the weed trees and the mm-hmm. dead brush and stuff. But it's become complicated. It's become, so I just would like a blessing for it to turn out well. We're trying to put trees in. We've had some disagreements, as you know, with the neighbor who's still not very happy with us. But so I just would like a blessing.
They'll
for that
get
to
happy
end up
with
going
you.
Smoothly. Yeah.
When
so,
they start feeling the life again, they'll be happy. You know.
Yeah. So that would be nice. And just a blessing for a little bit more compassion and peace in the world, because there's so much conflict, there's so many divisions, there's so much propaganda, there's so much censorship. We don't know really what's going on from one minute to the next. But a lot of people are suffering in the world, so it would be a wonderful thing to have some blessings for those folks to have less suffering in their world.
Yes, we always do that, always. And especially for the children growing up in all of this conflict, you know, it must be so depressing for them to think, do I even have a future?
Yeah,
Yes.
And all that,
you do.
The manufactured divisions and hate and all of that instead of, you know,
oh,
love
yeah.
and peace. Yeah. So that's really it. That's what I wanted to mention.
Well, that covers a lot, and that's wonderful.
Yes.
We love you, Caroline. Thank you for calling and being here, Caroline, every week. And thank you for last week. We're just so glad you're here and that everybody's here today. We have a pretty big crowd here today. So, Glenda, that's the last of our callers. So we really
okay.
can move into our blessing. Let me put us into lecture mode.
All right, everyone, we have, we need to move into our blessing shortly, and we will, but let's get moving. Get up out of your chair if you can. Get up out of your bed if you can. All right, I'm honoring and recognizing the fact that some people come here to receive a blessing, and they have a mobility issue, and we send our blessings to your movement. And I think it's even more important that you move a little bit, because it's easy to become convinced that I am forever immobile. No, you're not. One thing you can always change is your heart. Another is your mind. Another is your relationships in life. And hopefully you've got some part of your body that you can physically move and create with and facilitate the needs of your life with. So I'm going to say to all of you, whatever is involved in this, get moving. Life moves on. Everything in existence is energy, which means it moves. And life is always moving on. And one of the reasons conditions linger for you that are not optimal is because you're not moving them. Just move them. For those of you who can get up, I want you to stand up. I want you to get close to something. If you have a balance issue, be close to something you can hold on to. Because that's a key thing right now too. But just step forward and lean into your step. Step forward with the other leg and lean into it. Now, hold on to whatever you can and push it back. Push it back so that you flex your hips from the back side. That sacroiliac area is an area that gets so locked up in all of us. From sitting. And we should not allow that to happen. Sitting is over a long period of time is not good for us because it blocks the flow from the top to the bottom portion of your body. And you need to correct that. One thing that actually can work beautifully if you're still seated is you start moving your shoulders, one shoulder at a time up and then leaning into the other side. So you're actually tilting your hips in the chair, okay? Take one shoulder up, the other one down. Lean into it so that you're going to stretch that side of your body where your shoulder is up. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Do it. All right. Now, let's do it the other way. Shoulder up. Pull it up. Stretch that side of your body. Okay. Now we're going to add to that movement by getting your shoulders level, but we're going to move them. You're going to twist them a little bit on your spine so that we're twisting the upper part of your spine. Okay? You'll still be moving the lumbar area, but I want you to move that upper part of your spine. Yeah. All right. Now, take one hand. Doesn't matter, right, left, make a fist, and reach it for the sky. Reach it up till you're almost stretching your arm out of your shoulder. Reach.
just you're gonna reach for a little bird that's gonna fly by through your mind, and you say you're gonna pet that bird. All right, now I want you to take the other side, make a fist, reach up. That's it. Now you may feel stiff at first because when you've gotten stiff in your lower hip region, it's going to go all the way through your body, and let this be an example for you. Now I want you to open your fist and reach for a little bird or a butterfly. Okay, let it land in your hand. Okay, now bring it down. Right. All right, now I want you to bring your elbows and make a little bird wing with your arms. So if you're folding your arm with your elbow, then bringing your hand up to your thymus area. Okay, we're going to pound on the thymus to wake it up, because it wakes up your immune system. It wakes up your lymphatics, okay? This is why primates will pound on the thymus before they go into any kind of action, whether it's hunting or fighting or whatever, or hanging from a tree. They're going to do this to get their lymphatics moving. Okay, now as you do that, you're going to have little wings off to your side because you're bent at the elbow. We're going to lift them up as much as you can and then lift them down. Kind of like that little bird, it's going to flap a little bit. I want you to recognize through that you've got wings. You've got wings. You can fly. Okay. And now, let's just wrap this up with the lower part of your body. Okay. Oh, that feels good, doesn't it? Yeah. And it feels better than if we had done that first. If we'd done it first, it would have just stayed in the legs, but actually doing it now, it relieves tensions all through your body. Now you're ready to relax. So what you want in life all through your days is to be as relaxed as possible, but not frigid, not locked up, calling it relaxed. That's not relaxed at all. Once you're in a state of tension, that actually leads to hypertension because your frozen body, and I don't mean frozen by temperature, I'm talking about locked up, it translates into rigidity of your arteries and to your heart having to work harder to move blood through your arteries and back to your heart. It has to work harder when you're all tensed up. This is the problem with tension and hypertension, okay? You can't get the blood moving well enough without working your heart too much. And even sleep doesn't relax you if you've tightened up like this. So I want you to either follow some of the routines I give you or find some good routines for you. And I'm not talking about physical therapy, not talking about exercise. It's just the kind of little stretches that free you up from being locked up. We don't want that. You go back to being relaxed. So now I need you sitting in your chair with your feet on the ground. And have your feet uncovered if you can. That's the best way. If you need to have some covering on your feet for whatever reason, make sure it's natural. Cotton, wool, linen, silk, whatever. But don't have rubber on the bottom of your sock. We're going to connect with the earth. We need the earth to A, ground you, and B, magnetize and pull in through you energies of the solar system, the galaxy, the universe. If you remember things I've taught you in earlier times, the whole quantum field is right here. And you're sitting in it. And there is no before and after to the quantum field. There is no time and space to it. So it can bring energy to you from anywhere you need it. Understanding
from anywhere you need it. But you have to have an attractor field. And the earth is a beautiful attractor field. That's why I want you to sit quietly in a relaxed way in your chair. And your head, well, you can have it bowed if you want to, but it's better actually to have the top of your head facing up. Just sit up in your chair comfortably in a relaxed position, and that's all you have to do. Nothing forced, just relaxed. And your head uncovered, unless you have a meditation or religious protocol that requires you cover it. But even then, let's use the same there as we do with our feet. It's got to be natural. Cotton, linen, wool, silk. Suppose bamboo would be fine. As long as it's natural, that's all right. And if you really need to pay that respect to your other protocols of belief, then do it. It's all right. We're not putting you into any kind of rigid mode. We just want you to be relaxed, open, and appropriate to receive the blessings of Christ and the counter blessings of the earth. I'm going to offer my prayer to Yeshua. And when I'm finished, you begin your prayer. Your prayers are very, very important. And he emphasizes that several times in his teachings to the apostles. Why? Because you've got to have a connection. The fact that he's here doesn't mean you're connecting with him. He's here to keep you safe. He's here because he loves you. He's here so he's available. That doesn't mean the connection has been established. You must establish the connection. And you might be saying, well, why doesn't he? Because he won't interfere with your free will and your growth in life, your responsibility in life, including self-responsibility. So he says, pray, and you will follow my prayer with yours. And it also attracts to you exactly the energy you need. There's every kind of energy in the world available, but it's not all relevant to your life. You want things coming in that can make your life better, that can lift you up, heal your body, and bring prosperity to your life and your home. Okay. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me? Yeshua. O Lord of life, Son of God, we ask your blessings upon us today, and we express ingratitude for all the blessings you have given us throughout our life. Your connection to us makes a difference. And we ask that you will honor our desire to be in connection with you. And may that be a live connection that can bring us all the things we need, answer all the questions we have, solve the mysteries of our life, and allow us to be better installed with the energy of life. We ask your blessings upon all of humanity. And of course, we know you continually offer that. But we ask for all of those who seek these blessings, that they may have a heart open to receiving, a heart open to discovering and implementing and gratitude for whatever is given. Remain with us all the days of our life, that we know the fullness of what you have to offer. Amen. Now begin your prayer, and the blessing givers and I will begin our conduction of this beautiful blessing for your life. Amen. Amen and amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, receive. In order to set off the receiving, I want you to go and lie down anywhere close, your bed, a sofa, a mat on the floor, whatever works for you. Just lie down so that your body is horizontal. That is its most healthy, vulnerable position, which is why we sleep that way. And it's okay if you fall asleep, but I want you to be there for at least 7 minutes and no thinking. That includes no praying either, because words will register in your brain. And then your brain will get active, and it'll stop the flow. Okay? Your brain doesn't have answers for this. It's a beautiful instrument, but it doesn't always have the answers. And right now we want it to rest. Okay? So we're not going to focus on problems. We're not going to even finish our prayer. Just be you. You are enough. You are the treasure of God. Amen. And of course, I always wish you wonderful blessings and look forward to being with you again this week. Bye-bye for now.